Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are. This week, new unemployment claims are down again, and continuing claims are down. That's even more important and better. The stock market goes down, and everyone's blaming Greece. You can blame Greece for a larger belly, but I don't think you can blame Athens for a large loss. Maybe unemployment? The euro value? How does this stuff work? Children's Tylenol is recalled. Some containers contain too much of the active ingredient, some too little, and other have foreign material. Drugs are so grand, the lawsuits are sure to follow. In the British election, it looks like the result will be a hung parliament. No one knows how well this will go. Whether you think Arizona will be hurt by a boycott is directly linked to whether you favor the anti-immigration law. Neanderthals are reportedly mated, they did reportedly mate with more modern humans, according to a group of biologists. Their genes are in the genome of some humans. Okay, probably mostly men. Speaking of non-male Neanderthals, Sarah Palin upset many of her followers by endorsing Carly Fiorina for the California GOP nomination for governor instead of Assembly Representative DeVore. Conservatives in California are saying Sarah Palin isn't far enough to the right. Not funny, but newsworthy, Max Pilevsky has died. Pilevsky was 85, and unless you lived in Southern California at some point and are politically oriented and are of a certain age, you have no idea who he was. Pilevsky was an early technology expert and sold a company he had begun to Xerox in 1969 for a lot of money. He then became an early investor in Intel and other high-tech companies. He was also a supporter of Bobby Kennedy's presidential election bid in 1968 and was a contributor to a city council member named Tom Bradley, who became L.A.'s first and thus far only African-American mayor. Okay, here's something brilliant. Senators Joe Lieberman and Scott Brown are sponsoring a bill that would, if passed and signed by the president, fat chance, strip citizenship from United States citizens who the State Department decides have given aid to terrorists. One little problem with the bill, called the U.S. Constitution. Now, Brown is fairly new to the Senate, and his previous experience includes being a centerfold a number of years ago. But Lieberman? Okay, he's an idiot. Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. That would be me. All that, news of the weird, and our guest, a returning guest, Larry Hancock, who will talk about the RFK assassination and some more and other stuff, too. But first, if you have a website and you're not blogging, you're missing the best thing you can do to drive eyeballs to your website and dollars to your bottom line. You can do it yourself for free, or you can have a professional writer do your blogging for you for under $100 a month. Go to jeffonblogging.blogspot.com and read all about it. Again, that's jeffonblogging.blogspot.com. Larry will be joining us at about 5 minutes before the hour. It is now about 32 minutes after the hour, so you can do your math. And until then, let me invite you to call in to discuss politics, technology, astrology, biology, phrenology, anything that you're interested in, more or less, and we'll talk about it here on Speaking with Everything. If you wish to call in now or after Larry joins us, the phone number is 347-994-3796. Now, if you don't want to join us, the phone number will be 347-994-3796. Let's talk about some of those headlines we covered at the start of the show. The new unemployment claims are down again. That's something we're reporting week after week. New jobless claims are down. That doesn't mean the problems are over regarding unemployment or the economy. But the fact that they're going down is, well, a lot better than them going up. So fewer people are making first-time unemployment claims continually, fewer and fewer every week. Now, the truth is we lost a lot of jobs in the recession, so it's going to take time for that to have a real material effect. But again, consumer confidence is up because of that, and that's a good thing. I note we have a call, so let's take it. It looks like someone's from the Houston area. Are you there, Houston?
Yes, I'm here. How you doing, Jeff?
Good. How are you, sir?
I'm doing okay for an old guy.
Okay. My usual line. What's your first name?
Rob like a bank.
Okay, Rob like a bank. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I just heard you say, now, you're going to have Larry Hancock. Now, you said he was talking about the RFK, or you mean JFK?
No, I mean the RFK. He has been on before. Thank you for an opportunity to explain this. He's been on before, and we've spoken about the JFK assassination, and we've also spoken about the Martin Luther King assassination, and several weeks ago, we began speaking about the Robert Kennedy assassination, and he's joining us again for that tonight.
I see, because I noticed a blog on JFK Lancer, and they maybe incorrectly posted that you were going to be speaking with him regarding JFK.
Well, we have spoken about that before, and if you're interested, you can check the same website by which you have joined us tonight to listen to some of the archived editions. Unfortunately, they're not labeled, and we do begin the interviews at half past, or I should say at the top of the hour, very near the top of the hour, about halfway through the program, so it's a case of search and seek out, which is not easy, although I will be able to tell you probably in a moment that he did join us on April the 8th. So if you want to listen to that show, that was also not about the JFK assassination. That was the last time we spoke about the RFK killing.
Are you going to be speaking with him live? I'm sorry.
Yes, absolutely. Well, yes. He'll be joining us, as I said, about 5 minutes before the hour. And he'll be on. If you'd like to give us a call after that, if you have some questions, you don't have to restrict yourself to what we're specifically talking about. He does, as you probably are aware, since you went to the Lancer site, has a lot of knowledge about the JFK assassination and has written a book on the subject. So if you'd like to basically click off now and rejoin us after he does, you're more than welcome to do that.
Oh, I sure appreciate that. I'll do that.
All right, Rob. I'll look forward to hearing back from you then.
Thank you, Jeff.
As will the enormous numbers of people in our audience.
All right. Sounds great.
All right, Rob. Thanks very much.
All right.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. You too. Okay, and that applies to you too. If you'd care to join us now, or as I say, when Larry joins us, feel free. Reverting to the news stories, we were talking about unemployment. Let me cover that first. The continuing claims for the second week in a row are also down. So the first figure has to do with the fact that people who are applying for unemployment because they become unemployed keeps going down, and more importantly, the continuing claims are down. And what that means is that the people who are filing a request to be paid unemployment compensation after the first week in which they file, that's been reduced, not just after the second week, but all the other weeks. That's coming down. That's another good sign. Again, not the conclusion, but a step in the right direction. Now, the stock market today, as many of you know, had the largest intraday loss in terms of number of points that it's ever had. It came back up, and when the day was done, I believe it lost just over 300 points. The pundits who were broadcasting a variety of news outlets today were saying, well, it's because investors are worried about the country of Greece. I say the country of Greece so that I can't be put into a position of having to make a joke again about the word Greece. But they were all postulating that the concerns about Greece's debt and the rescue that the European community is undertaking with regard to Greece is going to have a negative effect on the world economy. The fact is that every time you hear someone analyze why a stock market went up or down and stated as absolute fact, you can almost always be certain they're wrong. Because no one knows when people buy or sell stocks, although it is communicating in a way, no one says why. Some people are doing it because they need to raise money for some specific personal need. Some are doing it because of a fear that the market will go down. There are all kinds of reasons. But even when there is a belief that the market will go down, there can be all kinds of reasons why that belief is present. Let's talk about some examples right now with regard to the market fluctuation today. Gyration might be a better word. If the unemployment rates essentially are going down. That's not quite true, but if essentially unemployment is moving in the right direction, that is to say moving towards reduction after unemployment claims are down, how would that affect the market? What is it that people are fearing in terms of long-term investment? Well, if you think about that for a minute, you'll understand that that by itself, if that fear is substantial, and I'm not suggesting it is, because you know what? I don't know what's in people's minds either. But this is one other plausible explanation. If people believe that unemployment is going to really turn around and that the economy is going to start doing really, really well, and we've had an increase in gross domestic product for each of the last two quarters, if that's what they believe, that could cause the market to go, class, down. Why down? Because when the economy starts to do well, what will occur, and if this will occur in our economy, nobody knows when, we're going to have inflation. When inflation starts to go crazy, and we're still a long time away from that, what happens is the Federal Reserve Board, more specifically the Open Market Committee of the Federal Reserve Board, raises interest rates. When you raise interest rates, it becomes more expensive to borrow money and to do business and so forth, and you tend to have a contraction. So if the fear were widespread, which sometimes happens with reductions in unemployment, if the fear is widespread that the economy is going to start doing so well that we're going to have inflation and therefore higher interest rates, that could be a reason why the market would go down. Additionally, if you have a belief that what's going on with Greece and Western Europe is a good thing, that could also make you want to sell. Why? Well, because if the rescue plan works and Greece comes out of its crisis, and if the other sick kids in the European community, such as Spain and Portugal, are prevented from going under economically, the fact is that that will logically, likely increase the value of the Western European currency, the euro. What happens if the euro goes up? What happens to the dollar? Anyone? That's right. My sole audience member in the sumptuous studio is moving a thumb down. That's right. If the euro goes up, all of the things being equal, the dollar goes down. If the dollar goes down, it means that foreign goods become somewhat cheaper and domestic goods become more expensive. If that happens, that means that our exports go down and our imports go up. That's basically it. So that is not, generally speaking, considered a good thing, although there's a legitimate argument about that the other way as well. Bottom line is, nobody knows why the market did what it did, except when the market really started to tank, people, investors seeing this in a panic will start to sell. It has a snowballing effect. And the likelihood of the market going up today had a snowball's chance, but that's a whole other story. The Brits went to the polls, and the polls probably went to the Brits, but that's a whole other story. That was 1939. In any event, it looks like the result's going to be something like this. The conservatives will have about 305 seats in the parliament, 21 short of a majority. Labor is likely to have approximately 255, and the liberal Democrats about 61. You have to understand how parliaments work and how the numbers will work to understand what may be happening. What everyone is saying is it's going to be coalition government, but let's talk about that for a moment. In a parliamentary system, the prime minister, who heads the government, is elected by the members of the lower house in the national legislature, the equivalent to our House of Representatives. If our government were parliamentary, Nancy Pelosi would be the person running the country. Leaving that aside, the lower house in Britain, that's called the House of Commons, elects the prime minister, and that's done normally with a majority of votes. But if you have no party having a majority, then what occurs is that the head of one of the parties is given the opportunity to try to form a government first. As a matter of historical convention, in England, if there is a sitting prime minister, even though his party has not received the greatest number of votes in terms of the number of seats in parliament, that person will be allowed to first try to form a government. So here's what's happening. The current prime minister, Gordon Brown, he heads the Labor Party, which got the second most votes in the election today, assuming that the numbers that were doped out earlier today, in fact, pan out. He will have the second most number of votes. That is his party, the Labor Party. He will have an opportunity to form a government which can vote a majority of votes his way. Clearly, if either party is to govern, and of course one of them will, what they're going to have to do is get the Liberal Democrats to go their way. This has a number of effects. One of them is that neither Labor nor the Conservatives will be able to have their way fully in terms of legislation over the next several years, because they're also going to have to satisfy the Liberal Democrats who agree to join the coalition. The reason? If they displease the Liberal Democrats, they'll withdraw from the coalition and new elections will be necessary. It's all a lot of power playing, and some of it is boring if you're not really interested in this stuff, and if that's what just happened to you, wake up. We're moving on to another subject. The state of Arizona, from which we are speaking, as most of you know, about a week and a half ago, passed, and the governor signed, a law which is intended to essentially chase illegal immigrants out of the state and back to where they come from, typically south of the border. By typically, I don't mean that there's a majority of illegal immigrants who come from there, but that's typically what they're trying to combat. There's no racism in this, of course not. And among the bases on which police officers are instructed to stop people on reasonable suspicion is, as a practical matter, what they look like, although the law was amended to say that they can't do any racial profiling. Okay. If you have red hair and freckles and you're driving through Phoenix, the likelihood is you're not going to be stopped on the basis that you may be an illegal immigrant from Ireland. Just a hunch. In any event, there have been calls throughout the country to boycott Arizona and not do business with them. Among other places, West Hollywood in California has voted to not do business with them. The city of Boston has voted in such a way that city officials are not supposed to participate in meetings in Phoenix. There was a convention that was scheduled for Phoenix that has been canceled and is being moved to another location. So this is going to cost Arizona some money. But if you ask people in this state whether they think that the boycott will catch on and harm Arizona, you will find that if you don't like the law, if you meet someone who doesn't like the law, like me, for example, doesn't like this law, they think the boycott will hurt. If you speak to someone who likes the anti-immigrant law and ask them if the boycott will hurt Arizona, they will say, nah, won't have any effect whatsoever. Oddly, it was only after years of boycotts and canceled conventions and the like that the Martin Luther King holiday went into effect in this state back in the late 80s. The governor who took office in January of 1987 had decided he wanted to get rid of the Martin Luther King holiday, which had been passed by the legislature, and he did what he said he was going to do. He did, in fact, eliminate it. But as a result, many people stopped doing business with the state, and eventually the law was passed to make Martin Luther King's birthday a state holiday, and that's the way it is now. But it was only after the boycott. So I guess my reasoning is that the boycotts will likely have an effect, but I don't pretend to know for sure that that'll be the case. But I will tell you that if, as I said, if you find someone who says a boycott will have no effect, it's because of the fact that they, or not because of the fact, but it's closely related to the fact that they think that the anti-immigration law is a great thing. Okay. We talked about another activity that's attempted to, that's being attempted to, in some fashion, punish terrorism. Well, Senators Lieberman and Brown are offering legislation in the United States Senate that would strip citizenship from an American citizen. There is no mechanism for doing that. An American citizen has the right to do what's called renouncing his or her citizenship. You can do that if you're so inclined. And the kind of situation where people do in fact renounce their citizenship is where they're making a lot of money and prefer the tax system of another country. The last time I remember someone renouncing their citizenship goes back to when I was a kid, which is, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago. And Elizabeth Taylor renounced her American citizenship when she was living in England with Richard Burton. And she did so because the tax treatment she was getting was somehow better. I find that hard to believe, but apparently that was the case. She was able to get more tax advantages by being a British subject than she was an American citizen. I don't know if she ever took her citizenship back, but you do, as I say, you do have the right to renounce it. But the government cannot take your citizenship away. They can take other rights away. They can put you in jail, make you a felon if they convict you of a felony, and you may lose your right to vote. But you do not lose your citizenship, and that would be clearly unconstitutional. If you'd like a copy of the Constitution of the United States, by the way, it's readily available on the Internet, and it's a fairly short document, even with all the amendments. And I suggest you may want to go ahead and download that, because very often someone will say something's unconstitutional, which you don't agree with. Just go ahead and toss it their way and say, show me. And you'll find that someone will hem and haw because they almost inevitably don't know what they're talking about. And as an example of that, all the people who said that the health care reform legislation, or health care financing reform legislation, is unconstitutional, I would respectfully challenge anyone who believes that to call in tonight and tell me where in the Constitution it says anything that could be stretched to encompass a view that says that's contrary to the Constitution. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes before Larry Hancock joins us, and you're welcome to call in now or after he joins us at 347-994-3796, as Rob did earlier this evening. Newsoftheweird.com is a great website. And if you want some laughs and want to see some very strange videotape, or video recordings, I should say. Nobody uses videotape anymore. If you want to see some very strange video recordings and have a lot of laughs, it's newsoftheweird.com or newsoftheweird.blogspot.com. And we have gone there to get this information, these stories, which I think you'll like. At a high school in Florida, students were complaining that someone was stealing from their gym lockers. Complaints to the administration of the school weren't helping. The thievery was still going on. So one of the students decided to take matters into his own hands and his own technology. His phone is one of the more modern ones, unlike mine, which has a video recorder, video camera, camcorder. And he set it up through his locker to record what was going on the other through the slats in the locker to record what was going on so they could tell who was doing what. Well, the recorder was running when nobody else was present, and when the recording showed the gym teacher rifling through the lockers, the teacher was arrested and the robbery stopped. See, this just further demonstrates we're not paying our teachers enough. Okay. This story is a little weird. If you have just eaten dinner or lunch or breakfast, depending on when you're listening, and what your weird food habits are, you may want to tune out for about 30 seconds. At the Cape Coral, Florida, Walmart. Let me try that again. At the Cape Coral, Florida, Walmart, a woman took $163 worth of clothing into a fitting room and urinated on it before leaving the store. Now, there was another story from January in Ohio. A man walked into a Canton, Ohio, Walmart and urinated in a cooler full of meat. Maybe he was a vegetarian, I don't know. About $600 worth of steak was destroyed. Now, those are the facts. What follows is opinion. I think maybe they're being targeted. Okay, maybe not. I knew someone who used to work at a Target, and they always referred to Walmart as Wally World. I don't know why exactly. In any event, that's basically the news. As I said, we're going to have Larry Hancock on in a couple of minutes. Larry is the author of, among other things, the book Someone Would Have Talked, the research on the JFK assassination. And I will give you his website once now and probably several times while we're talking. that website is Larry, and then a hyphen or dash, Hancock.com. And at that place you can get his book and read about what he's up to and see all kinds of other interesting stuff. And so I would recommend that site to you if you're interested in the subject at all. Larry talks about the Warren Commission and other matters related to the Kennedy assassination. Speaking of the Warren Commission, by the way, coming up later this month is a primary in Pennsylvania pitting the current senator, against a challenger within the Democratic Party, as especially those of you in Pennsylvania know, but most of the rest of the country is aware of it too. Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania changed parties about a year ago, becoming a Democrat after being a Republican for a number of years. And he was always a moderate to liberal Republican, but he became a Democrat. And one of the reasons he became a Democrat, as he admitted, was because he faced a tough primary in the Republican Party from Joe Toomey. Well, Mr. Toomey, I don't know, remember his first name. Joe Sestak, the congressman from the Philadelphia area, is running against him for the Senate. And Arlen Specter, of course, was a member of the Warren Commission. I think we have Larry joining us now. Larry Hancock, are you there?
Good evening, Jeff.
How are you, Larry?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. Wonderful to hear your voice again.
It's good to be back.
Yeah. I was going to say, you're the most regular guest we've ever had, and that doesn't have anything to do with your digestion.
Not at my age.
No, mine either. What is this, your fourth time back?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, well, good. It's good to have you back. You may have missed, and he may join us in a few minutes. We had a gentleman call in actually to speak to you before you were here, so I don't know if you heard that or not. He may come back and join us, and we may have other callers. If you're interested in talking to Larry about, I guess, the broad topic of American political assassination, the number here is 347-994-3796, and Larry's website is larry-hancock.com. How'd I do?
I did perfect.
Okay. I've always had trouble remembering your website, so I just made sure I got it. We started speaking a couple of weeks ago about the RFK assassination, and obviously longer ago than that, about Martin Luther King and JFK. Before we talk more about RFK tonight, however, I think we may be getting a call back from Rob, because it's coming from the same area. So let's see if I can bring him in and not mess this up. Rob, are you there?
Yeah, hi. How you doing, Jeff?
Good. Hey, Larry, can you hear him okay?
I can.
How
okay.
you doing, Larry?
Good.
Fine.
I assume from your tone that you two know each other.
Well, figuratively speaking, I know about his work with JFK and his book, of course, that I understand is coming out with a revision this summer. Is that right?
It is. Hopefully, if the editor and I survive it, it ought to be out in about 45 days.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but is that going to include some other information regarding LBJ?
It will have some information about LBJ because it has a greatly expanded attention to the cover-up, I guess for want of a better term, that occurred after the assassination, which is pretty clear right now. Lyndon Johnson was definitely in charge of and driving, and there's we go into great detail about that, as well as what his own motives and may have been in doing so.
Now, have you, I'm sure you're familiar with Barr McClellan's book.
Oh, yes, I am.
Go ahead, Rob, and tell everybody else, what is Rob McClellan's book?
Well,
did you say, what was his first, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I'm sure Larry could probably give a better description of that, but Barr McClellan was an attorney on Johnson's team back in the day. I think it was actually maybe even a little, he didn't even join them until a little later until after the assassination, but he had an insider's view as to the goings-on with Johnson and his attorneys in Austin there.
Okay.
I think Larry could maybe clarify it a little better than I.
Well,
first, let me go ahead. What was the name of the McClellan book, if either of you remember?
Oh,
Larry? You don't recall.
It's called Blood, Money, and Power.
Oh. Yes. Okay, there you go. Thank you. All right, Larry, you were going to say something about McClellan.
Well, and I think one of the things McClellan deals with, and one of the things that I think has made Johnson suspicious to a lot of people, is if you really go into his history in Texas, not only with the Estes affair and some of the murders that occurred there and some of the activities by a fellow named Malcolm Wallace, who had been involved with Johnson's sister. Basically, it's a pretty nasty background. If you look at Lyndon Johnson, when Johnson got pushed into a corner, certainly you can make a case that some bad things happened.
Okay, I want to cover that more with you in a second, but go ahead, Rob.
I was just going to ask Larry, because I find that really interesting. I have, just to give you a little history, I saw JFK when I was a child growing up, and, of course, that impacted me as being my first president that I ever saw. And then, of course, when he was assassinated, of course, it shocked me, of course, like it did the entire nation.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd been following his assassination for probably the last 20 years or so in earnest. And with the AARB, is that right, Larry?
Right, that's correct.
Documents that have come out along with so many of the other things that have been written. Madeline Brown's book that came out, she was LBJ's mistress and had a child by him, et cetera, et cetera. It just, a lot of the arrows, as they were, seemed to point towards Johnson along with some other, and I know that you mentioned a lot of these in your book that's already out, Larry.
Yeah, I knew Madeline fairly well and actually helped invest and get Madeline's book out, as a matter of fact. So
I did know that.
I've been following the Johnson track for a long time. Lots of twists and turns in it. But one of the things, like I say, that I have expanded in this upcoming third edition is you get into the fact that Johnson drove the cover-up, and there's no doubt about that.
That's right.
I can prove that to anybody. So then the only question is, why did he do it? And that leaves you with two choices. And one is that he was really reacting to a setup in which Oswald had been patsy to the extent that it looked like it had been either the Cubans or the Soviets or both, and Johnson was acting proactively to avoid some sort of conflict, or Johnson was complicit. And I think I devote about four chapters into trying to handle that question in the book, coming down on pretty suspicious of Johnson.
Let me add in here, I think there is another possibility, and that is that Johnson was just scared to death, because the people who were involved, I'm not saying that I have an opinion, I'm just saying that's another possibility. You have, one, he was involved in the planning and the killing, two, he was afraid of a war, and three, he was scared of his own personal safety. The last one being because, you know, they had obviously killed one president that shouldn't, stop them from doing another.
Sure. And I think at first that seemed like certainly a viable option, but one of the things I did in kind of being obsessive detail, I literally went down and I tracked Johnson's activities almost minute by minute, which you can do over 72 hours after the assassination. And mm-hmm. one of the things that becomes clear, other than a couple of incidents which get a lot of coverage where Johnson appears panic-stricken, his actions just belie that. I mean, he shows no evidence of it. As a matter of fact, his own people closest to him that spent that evening with him said that they stayed up until 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, but Johnson spent all his time talking politics and how he was going to take over the Kennedy mandate and how he's going to raise money. And there's just nothing in his behavior that had any concern at all. Plus, as we talked about earlier, there's absolutely no indication that he was concerned from a national security standpoint. All of those things that you would think that he might have done if he were frightened, and he didn't do. So it's hard to find the actual evidence for him being afraid.
Well, Jeff, as Larry was saying, there's also a lot of other documents that come into play there. Mainly there's the Attorney General Ramsey.
Ramsey Clark.
I think Doug knows what I'm referring to. I mean, Larry knows something.
That's right. The Attorney General's name was Ramsey Clark.
Clark, and I think Larry knows what I'm referring to, where there's the documents that were sent that basically in part say that we have to convince the American people that Oswald acted alone, and along with the fact that Hoover sent notification to his FBI guys there in Dallas to stop their investigation because they had their man. Now, you would think that here the most powerful man in the United States has just been assassinated, right? I mean, you would think that you would want to not leave any stone unturned, right, if there
right.
was a conspiracy, correct? Now,
yeah.
correct me there, Larry, if I'm wrong. But
yeah, I mean, the if Johnson were really afraid, you would expect,
mm-hmm.
and Johnson never hesitated to protect himself. I think that's
right.
a fair statement. So if Johnson were really afraid, you would sort of expect a full-fledged push to take out anything that was making him afraid. But that's not what
mm-hmm.
he did. What he actually did is to send his own personal lawyer to Texas, to the Texas Attorney General, and essentially say that this lawyer was going to be in charge of the murder investigation, and he wanted the Texas Attorney General's cooperation because they were just going to put together a court of inquiry to essentially rubber stamp an FBI
uh-huh.
investigation that was over in 72 hours.
Yeah, I should also add that, you know, with what Rob was saying, it's not even a question. I mean, it's well known that the directive that you're referring to also went to the Warren Commission. I need you to go ahead and get the conclusion done to the rest of the country that Oswald acted alone. There's no reason to fear a conspiracy.
So, it's hard to make a case. The funny thing is the Texas Attorney General even wrote a memo to himself because that was
mm-hmm.
such a strange action because he knew Johnson's lawyer had no legal there's just
basis.
No legal cause for him to be doing that. So there were a lot of people that knew that things were not being played the way that they would expect them to be. And I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of people hesitated to talk about certain things, because there was already a sense that something was wrong, that it was not playing out the way that you would expect the assassination of a president to play out.
Right, the fix was in.
Yes, exactly.
Rob, you were going to say something, please.
Yes, sir. And I might add, I think, I hope, well, Larry can either confirm this or deny it, but, you know, Edward Clark, a lot of people are not familiar with or don't have any knowledge of the power that his attorney, that LBJ's attorney, Edward Clark, had in Texas.
Oh, yeah, huge amount of power in Texas. And for example, and most people would not be familiar with the Malcolm Wallace trial, but to make a long story short, Johnson was able, through his lawyers in Texas,
mm-hmm.
literally to abort the trial. And they got to mm-hmm. one of the jurors, and, I mean, this came out years afterwards when people actually said, oh, yeah, people connected to Johnson's lawyers managed to take out the trial, basically, and Malcolm Wallace.
Let me back you up a second. What was Wallace accused of? What was he charged with?
He murdered a man named Kinzer, who had been associated with Johnson's sister.
Right.
And he did it in cold blood. He actually shot him at a golf course in cold blood in front of witnesses, and in the end, he was given basically just released after the trial.
Larry, correct me if I'm wrong, but if my memory serves me right, he was convicted of murder and sentenced, and then the judge turned around gave him, just let him off the hook, just put him on like probation or whatever the heck it was.
Right, he never served any time.
Wow.
And actually, amazingly enough, a while later managed to get a security clearance and go to work for an aerospace firm.
Out there in California.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, again, it's an interesting case all of its own, but it does show, just as the Estes case in West
mm-hmm.
Texas, which people may remember, the amount of clout that Johnson had. He really could control judges, he could control the legal process, and of course there are a lot of people convinced that if worse came to worse, he could make even worse things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
yeah, well,
I may
have mentioned this to you before, Larry, which was there was a play that was written
McBird.
McBird, exactly. I think it was 1965. Yeah. You know, in and I remember I at one time held in my hand the play as printed. Well, I remember. I was just going to say. It just occurred to me where I got it. It was at a bookstore in Los Angeles. The play was called McBird. The cover of the printed copy was orange, like an orange cardboard type of paper, you know, or cardboard type of stock. And then inside was the was actually the play, including stage directions. And it was called McBird, and it posited what you're talking about now, that Johnson was fundamentally involved in the assassination plot.
And even as late as one of the things I've added to the book, a series of very interesting telephone calls that we now have, their transcripts from the presidential tapes, Johnson's tapes, and in early 1967, just actually even before the Garrison investigation became publicly known, Governor
Connally. That's the investigation of parish attorney Jim Garrison in New Orleans, Parish. Go ahead.
Even there's a fascinating call from Governor Connally to President Johnson, essentially warning Johnson that there is an investigation going on and there are a number of highly placed people talking about the fact that Johnson was involved in JFK's assassination. So it's not something that faded away very quickly either.
No. And, of course, Connally was an ally of Johnson's for years. Connally later turned Republican and served in the Nixon cabinet. But he was the governor, and he, of course, was shot at the same time that John Kennedy was shot. Some would say with the same bullet, but that's another story for another day.
Which Connally himself denied. It's
right.
I think we talked at one point. The funny thing is, it's not funny, but the two people that were in the car with JFK, the Secret Service agent that was in charge and Connally, both testified that there were a flurry of shots all coming into the vehicle at one time. There's no way that Connally said that he was hit by the same shot. And Kellerman, the Secret Service agent, testified to the Warren Commission that there was just no way that it could have been a single shooter. And, of course,
right.
They just ignored him. He was there, but, you know, okay.
And
What would he know?
Yeah, what would he know?
Yeah. Rob, go ahead.
I'm sorry, if I might interject here, I thought it was interesting that earlier, just before Larry came on, you mentioned Senator Arlen Specter. Well, as Larry knows, but I don't know if you're aware of that or not, Jeff, but Arlen Specter was the attorney that was the inventor of the magic bullet theory, which in fact stated that the same bullet that hit Kennedy went through him and hit Connally in numerous places, et cetera, et cetera. Am I correct?
Yeah, I had mentioned that Specter was on the Warren Commission,
yeah.
And obviously supported its findings, but I didn't know that he was the inventor of the single bullet theory.
Well, I think even more intriguing to me is the fact that actually the Warren Commission convened a panel of experts, Army ballistics experts, and a medical panel. They took a look at the film of the shooting. They were trying to determine if a single bullet could have hit both JFK and wounded Connally, and they did a lot of actual ballistics testing, bullet testing, and so on and so forth. And at the end, they met in a panel and you know, gave their conclusion, and their conclusion was that there was no single way that a single bullet could have done that, and that the shooting scenario that the Warren Commission, a la Specter, was proposing was just not possible. And this is a team of some dozen people, each with 30 to 40 years in the field. The only dissenting opinion was Arlen Specter. And Arlen Specter wrote up his report, took it to the Warren Commission, and basically buried that panel's findings. So Arlen is,
Go ahead.
Arlen, I think I heard him on PBS just a couple of days ago, and he talks about always going his own way. And that may be literally true.
as separated from people with knowledge. Thing that I know you both know, but for anyone who doesn't and who is still listening to us and who hasn't said, what are these guys talking about? but as both of you know, the only way you could have a single shooter and the single bullet, well, first off, the single bullet is the what's the word I'm looking for, the linchpin, if you will, of the single shooter theory. Because if you had more than that number of bullets, the timing is such that it would have had to have been at least two. But the only way that the single bullet theory can be correct is if it stopped in midair and changed direction.
Well, I think
besides the other issues with it.
Yeah, the other issues, of course, being the number of wounds, the amount of fragments that were in the car, the number of other shots, James Teague, the curb, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know.
Yeah.
But,
and there was more. There was more lead in, left in Conley's wrist than was out of that bullet, which was pretty pristine.
Exactly. There were the operating room nurse that helped operate on Conley, who helped you know save the fragments. And apparently, when they weighed those, they got more weight out of that than what was if you'd added that to what was it, Exhibit 399?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That it would have been an overweight cartridge.
Right.
Well,
which they manufacture relatively few of.
That goes right along with those able to, you know, I guess you'd call the smart bullet that can change course in midair.
Yeah. that's right. It's kind of like a temperature-seeking or heat-seeking missile. Go ahead with what you're going to say.
Well, one thing I was going to say that I have added to the book, again, in talking about the cover-up, we know because of the work of the Assassinations Records Review Board and interviews with the doctors and a lot of work that one of the staff members, Douglas Horn, did, we know a lot more about the actual autopsy and the problems that the doctors had. And I can trace a lot of that out in the book now, and one of the difficulties they had is it's clear that they went into the autopsy expecting to find what they had been told, which was a shooter from the rear, you know, and it wasn't what they found. They had a lot of trouble with it, and they went through several iterations of their autopsy report, and one of the big problems that they had is that as new information kept coming in, as the Zapruder film became available,
right.
And you could... As the information became available that a fellow named Teague had actually been wounded by a shot, as information kept coming in over the weekend, they had to revisit their original conclusions, and they faced a great problem because they had officially gone on record that evening of the assassination with a particular scenario, and it wasn't going to work. And
right.
Yet they had taken all of the photographs, taken all the x-rays, taken what they needed to support that first thing, and now the body's gone, and it's not working, and they really found themselves in a bind. You know, it's not humorous at all, but it just shows what can happen when you get trapped into a scenario where the facts really don't support it.
Well,
right.
I might add, though, if it's okay, that Boswell and Humes, who... were the pathologists at Bethesda, they were not forensic pathologists.
No, they weren't.
To begin with, and the other issue, the reason why I think if you could try to eliminate any of the other non-conspiracy theories is the fact that you had approximately, what was it, Larry, 12 or more doctors at Parkland who... gave their testimony, who said that Kennedy had a hole in the back of his head about the size of a baseball, and then when he gets to Bethesda, and these autopsy photos surface years later, there's no damage to the back of the head or to the occipit of the head. So,
and yet,
you were about to say occipital lobe.
Yes,
just slips off the tongue, doesn't it?
Yeah, just so delicately. Demonstrating, of course, that the host never has any control over an interview. we were going to talk about something entirely different, but I want to give Rob a chance to punch in any last points before we let him go, and then Larry and I will continue for a few minutes because we've only got 10 minutes left. Rob, did you want to add something else or ask Larry another question?
Yes, I apologize for...
Don't think about it.
...on the tangent here, but I wanted to... be able to contact Larry if possible, because I'd like for him to sign a new copy of his book for me.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, he can do that through the webpage?
Anybody's welcome to email me. My email is larryjoe@westok.net.
One more time, Larry Joe.
Larry Joe, all one word, at WestOK, W-E-S-T-O-K dot
West
net.
OK?
Yeah, West
as in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
All right, WestOK.
Dot net.
Dot net.
I appreciate that. I once again, thank you for your time, gentlemen, and Larry is great.
Yeah, Rob, thank you for joining us. Feel free to join in on any other show in the future. You were you don't need my compliments, but you were a very good caller, very intelligent and well-spoken, and I appreciate you having called in.
Thank you, and Larry, maybe we'll see you in November in Dallas.
Sounds good.
Thanks again.
Okay, you take care, Rob. Thanks.
All right, bye-bye. Bye.
And Larry, you and I are still together?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, there we go. Good. I have to make sure because it's always one of those things where, for example, when I use my cell phone and I put somebody on hold, I'm never really sure they're going to be here when I get back. This is not a cell phone, but the same kind of concept. Anyway, we were going to talk about Bobby Kennedy tonight. Obviously, we don't have a lot of time left. We've got about 9 minutes before we're off. So the first thing is, let me do what I've done before, and that is invite you to join us again so we can actually go ahead and cover that subject or finish it up. Good. And we may end up talking about some other political subjects having nothing to do with that. But first, what is it that Rob was referring to that's happening in November in Dallas? Before you answer that question, let me point out to those who don't have sufficient age or historical knowledge that November 22nd, 1963 in Dallas was when and where the assassination of John Kennedy took place. Go ahead with what's going on in Dallas in November.
Sure. Every year we have in the latter part of November, we have actually a research conference in Dallas. And we try to get together authors and people that have done historical research on the subject. It's not just a conspiracy research program. We do go into elements of the 60s history and JFK administration history. But obviously there is a lot of attention paid to the political assassinations, not only JFK, but RFK and MLK, and so it's a three-day conference. If people are interested, it's hosted by JFK Lancer, and the website is www.jfklancer.com.
Okay, good. All right, now, you're coming out with a revision. You said in about 45 days. Today is, as we're doing this, May the 6th. And by the way, I want to salute all of you Zeppelin fans. I don't mean Led Zeppelin. I mean Zeppelin the dirigible. The Hindenburg crashed on May 6th. I believe it was 1937, but I stand subject to correction. That anniversary is today. But it's May 6th that we're broadcasting. 45 days would therefore bring us to about mid-June. Is that what the plan is?
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be available by mid-June, certainly out and going to print by then. Whether or not it's actually, you know, available through Amazon or the website then, I'm not sure. Certainly by July, but it should be going to the printers in June.
Okay, so that also brings to mind the suggestion that anyone who's interested in Larry's book, although you may want to wait now for the new edition, but in addition to Larry-Hancock.com, and hyphen is not spelled out, folks, it's a dash, then you can go to that site or to Amazon.com, and you can find out more about Larry's book, and of course, after mid-June, the new one will be out. And like Rob, if you tell him you heard it here, he'll probably figure out some way to arrange to get you an autographed copy.
Oh, absolutely, and Lancer does that too, the publisher. JFK Lancer is the publisher.
There you go. All right. And in the remaining minutes, tell us a little bit more about what kind of evidence there is for Johnson having been involved in the lead-up to the JFK assassination or the plotting.
One of the things, and it's, the lead-up is circumstantial, of course, but one of the things that struck me is I was going again day by day through Johnson's presidential diaries and his call logs, and Johnson was being investigated along with Bobby Baker in terms of Bobby Baker was an aide to Johnson and very close to him and well known for influence peddling. And Baker was in trial in civil court, but he was also being investigated by congressional committees. And there
now, what was Baker's big problem? You said influence peddling. In other words, people were paying him off to go ahead and attempt to influence policy, both in terms of what Johnson did, although at that point he was only vice president, but also what was happening in Congress?
Well, and one of the things is Johnson had an immense reach into various agencies. For example, Johnson mm-hmm. was very well established inside the Agriculture Department mm-hmm. and had a huge amount of clout. So if you were looking for certain types of approvals that had to do with agricultural products,
farm policy,
he also was very close to some of the defense committees. If you wanted defense contracts, there was a lot of that going on. So it probably Johnson had more clout in his senatorial role and in
sure.
his speaker's role than as vice president. So Baker was still essentially selling Johnson's congressional clout, if you would, with committees.
Right, and let me point out, not to correct you or anything, but just to make clear, he was actually the majority leader in the Senate. And in those days, that was a very powerful position. It still is, but it was much more powerful then than now. Go ahead.
Right. So that's what Baker had been doing, and there was all sorts of testimony being taken. Justice was investigating. And as we discussed, I think, in an earlier call, it's recently come to light that Life magazine, in a series of articles on Estes, was preparing a full-blown exposure on Johnson, which I've talked to Life employees myself, which Life really expected that once they published it, Johnson's political career was over.
Mm-hmm.
And it was due to be on the newsstands the week after the assassination.
It was scheduled prior to the assassination to be on the newsstands the
right.
week after.
And it never happened because, obviously, that issue was taken over by coverage of the assassination. But the point being is that Estes was in trouble, Johnson was in trouble, and Johnson was in trouble for a couple of different things, including the TFX fighter scandal, which you have to, a General Dynamics thing, a Texas thing that, again, you have to be out of the 60s to remember. But a lot of that was going, a lot of scandals
right.
were going on that were bringing pressure against Johnson and the Democrats and the Kennedy administration, because obviously JFK couldn't avoid Johnson's scandals. And when you start looking
right.
at Johnson's stress levels, and he was actually his lawyer, the same fellow that I was talking about before that was assigned
yeah.
to handle the assassination investigation, was mm-hmm. serving as Baker's lawyer.
No conflict there.
No,
let me ask
no.
We've got two minutes left according to the switchboard directory here. So let me ask you a couple of questions. First off, if you're available in 2 weeks, I have an opening in 2 weeks for you to join us again, if that'll work for you.
Shouldn't be a
that
problem.
That would be okay. And so everybody tune in 2 weeks. Tune in next week too, because we have a very good guest then as well. And we'll talk about obviously what we're talking about now, plus the RFK assassination. And I have, and as a question for you, very briefly, did you ever read the book on the President's Secret Service, which came out recently?
Yes, I did.
Okay. I'd like to talk to you about that as well when next we get together, because that book, I don't know if it had the same effect on you as it did on me, but it was frightening.
Yes.
Yeah.
Worrying or frightening, both.
Yeah,
probably.
Exactly. All right. Well, we are about out of time. So, again, Larry, thank you. If you want to join us in 2 weeks to hear Larry again and next week as well, of course, feel free to do that and call in if you wish that time, as Rob did tonight. And we'll have a good, interesting discussion again. It's always good with Larry.
I look forward to it.
All right. Me too. Thanks, Larry. Talk to you soon.
You bet.
Take care. Bye-bye. And for those of you who have joined us, either in live edition or in archive, thank you. Next time, bring some friends and listen in. And we appreciate you joining us. The people who listen to the show continues to go up, and we appreciate every one of you at the risk of sounding sycophantic. Anyway, thanks again. Take care, and have a great week. So long. Bye-bye.